Before the rush takes over, start your Christmas journey with Premier's Advent Moments interactive calendar. Open each door and step into the unfolding story of Jesus with daily challenges rooted in kindness and a verse that brings you closer to Bethlehem. You'll also receive short emails of encouragement to help you stay centered through Advent. Sign up at premier.org.uk/advent2025. Brought to you by Sat7 UK.
Lucas on Life.
Well, good evening. It's Sunday evening and welcome to Lucas on Life. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio. I'm Jeff Lucas, and tonight I'd like to talk about a subject that absolutely affects every single one of us. I'm talking about money and stuff, the things that we accumulate. Rather obviously, there's been a lot of money talk going on around the recent budget. There have been all kinds of speculation about what the Chancellor would deliver, and with it, quite a lot of anxiety too. There have been concerns about inheritance tax, especially among the farming community. There's been a massive transfer of wealth because of those concerns, and baby boomers apparently have trillions to hand over. Certainly, there's been a focus on pounds and pence in these last few days. Some while ago, the Daily Telegraph ran a column pondering how much money we actually need to be happy, because money, in a sense, really does make the world go round, because we all need some of it. Most of us want more, some crave more, and some even battle envy when others have a bigger pot of cash than we have. A famous 2010 study concluded that happiness increases with income until, at least back then, it levels off at around £57,000 a year. According to the survey, after that, more money doesn't necessarily equal more happiness. Now, there are many that challenge that idea, and of course, inflation changes the figure anyway, but there are some who certainly agree. The Telegraph spotlighted Andy Harrington, age 55 back then and based in Kent. He was running a 21 million IT recruitment company, but he said it didn't really bring him happiness. "I didn't love it anymore," he said. "It just became just about making money." And so he sold the business and his financial security to chase happiness elsewhere. And he said that having more money can make more problems, added stress, including higher taxes, increased responsibilities, and even social isolation. He remarked, "When you out-earn your peers, you can't always share your goals or successes without feeling like you're showing off." And so for that reason, Harrington believed how you make your money is more important for happiness than how much you actually make. "I've had money, then I've had no money, and I've had money again," he said. "If you're not happy at 60K, you're not going to be happy at 600K. Well, again, some would agree or disagree with that, but certainly when it comes to cash in Scripture, there are around 2,350 verses that speak about handling money and possessions, compared to around 500 each on prayer and faith. Now, I have to confess that I find all of this personally really challenging, because I'm in that pension season of my life, although still very much working, but I've caught myself checking the stock market rather too often recently. So let's agree that money creates many challenges, but money is actually not the problem. We are. Money is not the root of all evil. It's the love of money that is the problem. In Matthew chapter 6, Jesus said, "No one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." It's interesting that when it came to identifying rivals for our affection, Jesus particularly zoomed in on money as a primary candidate. So tonight, let's talk about money and stuff. We're talking about money, possessions, and stuff. I think we all know, don't we, that meanness is ugly, grabbing is profoundly unattractive. We've been in Black Friday season as well as budget season, and Black Friday events are dark indeed, as the retail sector's excuse for a greed-fueled shopping frenzy sparks, in some cases, scuffles and scrums across the country. Determined ninja shoppers sometimes jump queues, elbow each other, shove and even punch each other in their determined pursuit of alleged bargains. The spirit of Ebenezer Scrooge, the lead character in Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, is alive and well at times on Black Friday days. We don't have to be penny pinchers to qualify as being stingy. We only need to insist that most of our penny and pounds are spent on us. Charles Dickens paints Scrooge, the wizened old skinflint, as a squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. Hardly a handsome portrait. But we don't have to wrestle with fellow shoppers to qualify as cheap. We've all been around those people who work overtime to be last in line when it comes to paying. So you go to the coffee shop and they open the door and insist that we go in first. And in some cases, sadly, this is not out of courtesy, but can be a tactical manoeuvre ensuring that we get to the counter before they do, which means we'll be more likely to flash our credit card. Or maybe at the end of a pleasant meal shared, the sudden departure to the bathroom is timed precisely to coincide with the arrival of the bill at the table. Returning from the loo relieved, their relief is heightened by the knowledge that you've paid in their absence. Irritating, especially when some veneer their meanness by trying to make a virtue of it, insisting that they're thrifty, when in fact they're just squeakily tight, rather too attached to their own money. All of this manipulative meanness not only takes a lot of effort, but actually can rob us of the sheer joy of giving generosity. A recent sociological survey featured in the book The Paradox of Giving revealed that generosity is really good for us, and not in some silly TV evangelist given God will make you rich kind of way. The meticulous research revealed that the more generous we are, the more happiness, health, and purpose in life we're likely to enjoy. Generosity not only blesses others, but brings a smile to our own hearts as well. And generosity, more importantly, changes the world. The early Christians profoundly impacted their culture with their generous lifestyles, even though most of them were poor. In their day, generosity was not widely valued. Roman society embraced a system called liberates. Simply put, the code went like this: you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. A really tidy arrangement unless you were poor and you had nothing to give. Widows and orphans found themselves stranded at the bottom of the social food chain. In beautiful contrast, the early followers of Jesus gave their service, their money, their goods, their time, their safety, their creature comforts, and their reputations with a generosity that was not just a series of isolated, unusual actions, but a way of life. They scattered good everywhere, freely and indiscriminately. They looked for sweaty feet to wash and even went further. When terrible plagues hit and huge swathes of the population fled the cities, abandoning the sick, many of the Christians stayed behind, nursing the ill back to life, which meant that some of them died in the process. It's been said that we are most like God when we give. Those early believers didn't just share words and ideas about God, but they showed a confused world what the giving God looks like. And so let's choose to live generously. And let's also have God's perspective on money and on the perils of accumulation of stuff. At the end of budget week, we're talking money, we're talking stuff. And yes, I know, it's also been Black Friday season. Moving house is really stressful. Now, I know I'm describing a first world problem. I'm very well aware that compared to the challenges that countless millions face with war, displacement, economic deprivation, and a host of other gargantuan difficulties, that encountering a few chaps with a large removal van, well, it's really no hardship. Nevertheless, our recent months have been a whirlwind of packing, often accompanied by some thoroughly unchristian muttering, at least from me. I've wondered if a lost eternity might involve endless, eternal relocating. I'd felt that we were rather accomplished in navigating house moves. Twice we've shifted our worldly possessions across the Atlantic Ocean. One of those earlier moves involved emptying a cobwebby loft, which created even more acute torment. Stumbling in the half-light between joists and catching my hands on that horrid yellow silicone insulation material, I managed to poke myself in the eye with an old TV aerial, prompting yet more unchristian muttering. We discovered elderly table lamps so ugly that they should never have been seen or been the light of day, and then boxes of photos, some of which were of total strangers, or at least of people that we'd forgotten we'd actually met. But this last move, well, it really was the worst of all. Some studies suggest that moving is the most stressful event after bereavement or divorce. Maybe that's an urban myth that's suspect and unproven, but that said, our decision to downsize certainly generated some tension. The anxiety wasn't caused by the presence of those burly chaps who grunted and groaned as they steered our furniture out through the front door. And the couple of breakages and scuffs that they left as souvenirs, well, they were to be expected. Rather, the main pressure came from the hard work of purging that was required before the moving men even darkened our doors. We discovered two vital truths about stuff. First, when you live life at speed as we have, you quickly accumulate chaos. We piled up documents with the intention of filing them away later, where the little stacks were left for a decade. When your days are spent in a hurry, this or that can be easily tossed randomly into drawers, resulting in many drawers filled to the brim with, well, this or that. But then, in purging, we discovered that our possessions can develop a strange power. We had determined to be ruthless. We sold and donated what we could, and we made repeated trips to the local recycling and rubbish dumps, committed to relentlessly discard. Yet, in the process, we found out that stuff, even relatively useless stuff, it's sticky. It doesn't want to part company with us without putting up a good fight. And while sorting, we repeatedly heard the insane whisper, "You never know when we might need that." We found out that stuff demands an irrational allegiance, perhaps like cash, an unreasonable faithfulness, even a mild form of worship. The cold truth was simple. The stuff had to go, and as it did, we felt a strange exhilaration. We'd successfully negotiated a clear-out, and what was left felt like a reflection of cleared hearts and minds, just a little less cluttered and encumbered. Perhaps in bidding so many things goodbye, we found out that we did not have to hoard like the proverbial squirrels sitting on a mountain of nuts. In a tiny way, the power to possess had been challenged, if only a little. After all, we'd only really rejected the things that were no longer valuable to us. This was no Mother Teresa triumph over materialism. But we took a faltering step, learning a small lesson, one that the marketers and advertisers don't want us to learn. Let's be grateful when we have enough, generous when we have the opportunity to help those who don't, and let's reserve our worship for the only one who is worthy. Because money is money and things are just things. Stuff is only stuff. Or, to put it more eloquently and indeed biblically, life doesn't consist in the abundance of possessions. Jesus said that. We can read it in Luke 12 and verse 15. We've been talking about money, about the accumulation of stuff. And as we've done that, I'm reminded that there's only one prayer found in the whole book of Proverbs in the Old Testament, and it's about money. You can find it in Proverbs 30. Addressing the Lord, the prayer goes like this: Two things I ask of you, deny them not to me before I die. Remove far from me falsehood and lying. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, Who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. Sounds like that's talking about contentment, learning to be content with what we have and be grateful for it. See you next week.
Lucas on Life.
Before the rush takes over, start your Christmas journey with Premier's Advent Moments interactive calendar. Open each door and step into the unfolding story of Jesus with daily challenges rooted in kindness and a verse that brings you closer to Bethlehem. You'll also receive short emails of encouragement to help you stay centered through Advent. Sign up at premier.org.uk/advent2025. Brought to you by Sat7 UK.